Hey freaks, this is Matt here. We just recorded RHR. This episode is brought to you by Unchained Capital. Our good friends at Unchained Capital help you have a multi-sig vault where they control a single key in the quorum and you control two keys. So you never lose control of your Bitcoin, but they will help you use financial services with your Bitcoin. Marty, do you want to continue on this thread?
Yeah, so on top of that, if you have your Bitcoin in a vault, you're also going to get access to their Bitcoin lending services. You don't need to be in a vault to get these services, but if you are in a vault, you're going to get them as well. And if you're not, you can get them anyway. All right, their vault services can help you with multisig, and then their lending service is going to help you not sell your Bitcoin. Friends don't let their friends sell Bitcoin. All right, what you do is you engage, you put Bitcoin up as collateral, and you get liquidity right away. It's tax beneficial. You're going to be able to get liquidity, and you're not going to have to sell your Bitcoin right away. Hopefully you don't sell your Bitcoin at all. Eventually you're able to pay back those loans. On top of that, they're doing a bunch of stuff in the open source world. The multi-sig quorum we were describing earlier can be created outside of Unchained using their Caravan desktop app. All right, they've open sourced how they're creating these multi-sigs because they just love the community. On top of that, they've got Gradually Then Suddenly, which is an incredible blog series from our good friend Parker Lewis, who's just basically orange-pilling everybody one blog post at a time.
Bullish as fuck.
They've got Slip 39, Hermit as well. They're really giving back to the community as they're building out these financial services for Bitcoiners. All right, go to www.unchained-capital.com. All right, www.unchained-capital.com. And got to give a shout-out to our other sponsor, the Cash App, motherfuckers. All right, you know all about them. And if you don't, let me tell you about them. They're going to let you do many things on this app. I use this app every day. Whether it be using their Boost program, I have my personalized debit card with my signature on it. When I go to Whole Foods, I click that Whole Foods Boost when it's available. It's been available a lot lately. I've been saving 10%. Couple that with the $1 off coffee, and they've got AMC rewards now too. You're saving money wherever you go. If you like go to the movies, you go to the store, you go to the coffee shop, Cash App Boost program is helping you save money there. On top of that, they're letting you stack sats. All right, you can buy, sell, send, receive Bitcoin on the app as well. Okay. And then they just introduced Cash App Investing. If you want to stack slivers of stonks, you can do that as well. If your favorite stock's a little too expensive and you just want a little piece, Cash App Investing is letting you invest as little as $1 in that stonk if you so please. You don't have to stack stonks. It's available there with the Boost program and stacking sats. Cash App Investing is a subsidiary of Square and member SIPC. Remember, you don't have to wait 4 to 5 days. Days for your money to get on the app. You can start investing today, whether it be sats, stonks, or just using the Boost program. Use the code stacking sats. That's one word, STACKINGSATS. You're going to get $10, and Cash App's going to be so kind to send $10 at our good friends at Owls Lacrosse. Owls Lacrosse.
Fuck stonks, stack sats.
Enjoy this app. Hey there, freaks. It's your boys, Marty and Matt. We're back for Rabbit Hole Recap. Big week.
Oh, shit, we're live?
We're live, dude. I just ninja launched you there. Before we get into the topics, Matt is taking a sip of a delicious whiskey that was sent to us by a listener, a Michter's single barrel.
Is it Michter's?
Michter's. Michter's? Michter's, maybe?
Well, the freaks will let us know. I think it's Michter's.
Michter's. By an at Captain Hatticle on Twitter.
It's the best bottle we've ever received.
Yeah.
Marty told me that 1 p.m. was too early to drink, but I insisted, so I am currently sipping on delicious bourbon.
I took a sip. I taste tested it, but I will not be drinking more than a sip this afternoon. Shout out to Captain Hatticle. Captain, H-A-D-A-C-O-L on Twitter. Thank you for this incredible gift.
I appreciate you, dude. This is fucking delicious.
Appreciate all of you. You don't have to send us whiskey for us to appreciate you. If you're here listening, just know that we appreciate you too.
Yeah, but I might appreciate you a little bit more if you send us a bottle like this.
Big week. Let's jump into, let's check Clark Moody's dashboard too. Before we get into this, he added some stuff this week. I forget exactly what. Current price is $10,222. Block height is currently 617,238. Getting closer, freaks. 22,762 blocks away from the halving. That was good math. You can check it.
Clark actually provides that number for us, right? So you don't have to be crazy.
Oh, where is it?
You don't have to rely on your math.
Let me find it. Let me find it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 12,762.
There you go. No more on-the-fly math necessary.
Not necessary. Shout out to Clark. Keeps adding to this every week. Mining Epoch 3. We'll be mining Epoch 4 very soon. The estimate on the dashboard is May 9th, 2020. I saw like an estimate for late April at one point a couple weeks ago. But it seems to be early May now.
It keeps moving up, right? Because difficulty keeps adjusting up.
Well, it's not the difficulty, it's more the hash rate is four.
Well, the hash rate goes up and then the difficulty goes up.
Yeah. But between difficulties, the hash rate's increasing.
Right.
Such that blocks are coming in a little quicker than 10 minutes.
So it's been constantly moving forward, basically.
The block time this period during this difficulty adjustment is actually 10 minutes and 10 seconds, so a little higher than usual.
Oh, so now it's moving back.
Look at this dashboard. We just have all this information at our fingertips. Bitcoin.clarkmoody.com/dashboard.
Check it out.
Go check it out.
What's our Tor percentage?
Tor percentage.
On Lightning.
It's a top node. On Lightning, it is, Tor nodes are 39.6%. Creeping towards 40%.
It wasn't that, that was my, 3 weeks ago, I was like, let's get it over 40%. You got to have achievable goals.
Almost there. Almost there. I think we're at like 38.6 last week.
Let's do it, guys.
Big, loud week from the government, particularly. A lot of agencies. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about and pertaining to the U.S. government, particularly posturing towards Bitcoin and virtual currencies. You want to start with the Steve Munchin Butts, the IRS, CFTC.
I think let's first just jump right into the Dropbit CEO getting arrested.
Okay, yeah. So that news, it went public earlier this week. If you were like scouring indictments, but I think the Bitcoin and Twitter community was made aware last night when Peter McCormick tweeted that the founder of Dropbit, which owns a parent company, Coin Ninja, I believe, was arrested for charges relating to a centralized mixer, Helix.com. Is that what it was called?
I think it's, but first of all, I think it's the opposite, right? I think Coin Ninja is the parent company of Dropbit.
Yeah, that's what I said.
He wasn't arrested for running Dropbit, which is a hybrid Bitcoin wallet, mobile wallet, where it has on-chain, it has a non-custodial on-chain wallet, and then it has a custodial Lightning wallet. He apparently didn't get arrested for that. He got arrested for allegedly running a centralized mixing service called Helix, and he had a dark market search engine called Grams, and I think he shut both of them down in 2017.
Yes. So if you read the indictment, who arrested him? The FBI? I think the FBI arrested him. They're saying that the Helix mixer was being used by criminals on Alphabay who were looking to, quote unquote, get clean coins. Again, and this comes back to the verbiage of the marketing of Helix and the nature of centralized mixing services like that. So he was arrested, particularly for enabling dark net market users to mix their coins after acquiring them on dark net markets.
Right. So Alphabay was one of the leading dark markets at the time. The indictment alleges that he had some kind of partnership with them. We're not sure what that is, whether that was an advertisement that he had on Alphabay or if it went farther than that. So Helix was a centralized mixer, which is, we've seen a lot of those in the past with Bitcoin. They had like BitMixer, Bitcoin Fog, Best Mixer, which got shut down. So this is, there's some nuance here comparing it to the current Chami and CoinJoin implementations that we have, these like Wasabi and Whirlpool, because those aren't custodial. This is a very simple custodial mixer where basically a user sends Bitcoin into the mixer, and then the mixer operator sends them different Bitcoin and takes custody in between there. So it's, hopefully it doesn't set a precedent for non-custodial options. I mean, it shouldn't. They're different.
But don't be surprised if it does.
Yeah, you never really know. And then, as you said, the verbiage is important in how these services get marketed. I never used Helix, but some people showed screenshots. I'm not, you know, I wasn't able to verify whether or not those screenshots were correct. But a lot of the verbiage on the website was about, you know, send your dirty coins, receive your clean coins. Who knows if there was advertisements and stuff with similar verbiage, like wording. When you see someone like Wasabi has gone in the exact opposite way and has gotten a lot of shit for it. Because like if you read their terms of service, it says, you know, you can't use it for any illegal uses, all this stuff. That is purely a privacy tool. And I think that was probably part of the reason why, you know, they don't say that, but I think it was part of the reason why they hung on to that fixed fee address for such a long time, is that they were trying to, you know, whether that's an effective strategy or not, they're trying to approach it as a compliant privacy tool, you know, that pays all its taxes and reports everything that it does.
Yeah. It's this weird gray area we find ourselves in. And I think that's like the theme of the week of all these announcements or news coming out from government agencies across the board, is that there's just so much confusion around the definition of what these things are, how we can use them, and how we can most importantly use them correctly to preserve privacy. So that's the big thing I've taken out of this week, is that I don't know if the confusion's on purpose or the lack of consistency across agencies and different sectors of the government, but it's hard to be a Bitcoiner and actually know how you can actually use this without getting in trouble right now.
It's probably a little of both, you know, malice plus incompetence. We've seen governments criminalize privacy has been an ongoing phenomenon for basically our whole lifetimes, and it keeps increasing and it keeps escalating.
Yeah, even outside of the States, Roy Sebag, I think that's how you pronounce his name, from Gold Money and Mene, he hopped on Twitter last week and basically said, hey, I just want to let my customers know that the Canadian government is forcing arduous and draconian AML KYC compliance on me and forcing me to shut down.
And he did like a minority report. He like called it pre-crime, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like supposed to like guess the motives of his users.
Yeah.
And that's mostly gold users. Mene accepts Bitcoin. I think Gold Money does as well, but it's majorly a gold platform to buy and sell gold. And at the same time, while they have a lot of this vagueness, they are actively going after people and trying to set precedent here. Like, they're throwing the book at this guy. They're going for 30 years, I think.
It took all his property.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth it to keep in mind that they, all of these, you know, unverified, whatever, but it's allegedly, like, they mixed a lot of coins, too. Did you see the number?
It was like 300 million or something.
At current, at that valuation then, right? Mm-hmm. Now it's like over $1 billion worth was mixed.
Well, if he was doing it, like, December 2017, it could inflate that number as well. Could be around there. So that's one instance. And let's be clear here, like that Helix, the way it marketed itself, was very dumb. And that's not how you should set up a mixing service. Like, centralized mixing services are Achilles heels and are subject to getting shut down pretty easily. They're centralized services. That's why Chami and Coin Joins, where users sign the transactions for the inputs and the outputs.
Wasabi and Whirlpool.
Yeah, makes a lot more sense and gives you better ability to argue that you were simply looking for privacy and weren't doing anything nefarious before that.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen regulators crack down on custodians as money transmitters, right? So it it does follow that it makes sense that they would crack down on custodians that are also facilitating privacy. That's even, you know, more egregious to regulators. So hopefully regulators understand the nuance there between custodial and non-custodial, right? But who's, you can't bank on regulators doing that, right?
No. And let's move to picking on the IRS. So the IRS this week is confusing the hell out of people. They've changed their guidelines at least three times since the beginning of the year, in regards to the definition of a virtual currency and how it should be reported on your taxes this year. And we reported in a few episodes ago that the IRS here in the States is making it mandatory to basically check a box that says whether or not you have received, bought, transacted in virtual currencies. And since that box has been added to the 1044 form, I believe, a lot of people have been scrambling to figure out what the definition of a virtual currency is. And the IRS has been changing the definition the first two months of the year. So earlier this week, the definition included of virtual currencies included any virtual currency that's not legal tender, including cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but also virtual currencies like V-Bucks and what's the other one? Roblox.
They used them as examples.
Yeah, use them as examples, but it seems that they're trying to basically tax any money outside the U.S. dollar that people are accruing. But like, how do V-Bucks work? Aren't they like stable coins as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's a centralized token on the Fortnite platform. I guess you can trade them through their platform. You can like put in an email address to gift V-Bucks to someone. It's worth mentioning here that, you know, they haven't actually, this isn't them necessarily taxing V-Bucks. It's a box that just, you're supposed to check if you've sent, received, held, used any virtual currency. It's like it's the step before they start saying, you know, next year, maybe the year after that, then they start going after people and say, disclose addresses, disclose holdings, disclose all these things.
Yeah.
But this is merely, and it is, you know, a privacy transgression in general, and just a phishing expedition, but it's specifically a disclosure if you've touched it, right?
Yes. And
also the other thing is what they've changed online isn't the official guidelines. It's like, that's not what you're supposed to officially go by, what they changed. That's like an extra context thing. That's what I saw on Twitter today from some lawyer.
But it's so fucked, man. They've been changing the definition of this throughout the years. There was a thread a few weeks ago when the box became apparent to everybody, and Jeff Vandrew, who's obviously he's an accountant, has had to do taxes for people, particularly people who have bought or invested in, speculated on cryptocurrencies. And the definition last year, or the year before, I believe, I forget which year it was, but it like excluded any cryptocurrency that was regarded as legal tender in any country. So I popped in there. I was like, yo, Bitcoin's legal tender in Japan. Like, is that like a loophole in this definition? They changed it after that. And so now the guidelines say if it's not legal tender in the U.S., you have to check the box.
I think basically the plan is to keep it as vague as possible so they can enforce it, you know, indiscriminately whenever they want. That's usually the MO. Here, especially in like early industries, stuff like, you know, with Bitcoin is, and you know, we're not tax attorneys, we're not lawyers or anything, but
yeah, we can't give you any advice here, but
consult your accountant.
And there is apparently, we haven't verified whether this is a legit document or not, but there is a document floating around Reddit of somebody who claims to be under an audit of the IRS.
And there might be photoshopped, but regardless, I think this is what people should expect to see. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's should be a wake-up call for people whether or not it's fake.
Yeah.
Did you see what they asked for? Like, they wanted full addresses.
Full addresses.
Like, everything.
They wanted everything, and then at the end, they were like, this may not even be all the information.
It's not an exhaustive list. Give us more if you have it. Or
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
We may ask for more in the future, so definitely check that out.
Breaking news here on Tales from the Crypt. I just ripped my pants. My balls are hanging
It
up.
Got too hot for him. One other thing, I just want to jump back to Dropbit real quick. If you are using Dropbit, the on-chain portion of the wallet is non-custodial, so funds shouldn't be at risk, but you should probably transfer them out anyway just to be sure to transfer them to a new wallet. The Lightning side is custodial, and those funds can be at risk if for some reason Dropbit assets are seized as part of this process. So you should, there's like a withdraw to on-chain wallet from Lightning, withdraw from Lightning button. Click that button, withdraw it to the regular on-chain wallet, and remove your funds as soon as possible.
Yes.
Not your keys, not your coins.
The next encroachment of the government is something I talked about in the bent today. Again, we don't know exactly what's going to come out of it. I felt compelled to just get ahead of it, maybe overreact to the headline, but because I think it's important for people to speak up. Steve Mnuchin, I don't know how to say his name. I'll get made fun of for it.
I think it's Mnuchin.
All right, maybe I got it right. I wrote Munchin' Butts in the newsletter. he basically came out and said the Trump administration is going to create new guidelines for cryptocurrencies in an attempt to prevent illicit activity and money laundering. So we don't know exactly what these guidelines are, what they're going to target yet, but it seems that at least the concept of cryptocurrencies is on the mind of the Trump administration. And I believe Trump has actually allocated a portion of his Secret Service budget this year to enforce these new guidelines that will be coming out.
Yeah, so both that came out this week separately. The budget specifically mentions cryptocurrency regulation, further cryptocurrency regulation and enforcement, specifically relating to the Secret Service being in charge of it rather than the Treasury Department. And then at the same time, Mnuchin had a speech where he mentioned this FinCEN regulation. There's no like actual official release of that. But he did use, I don't know if the freaks remember, he gave a speech maybe 6 months ago or 5 months ago where he was saying that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies were being used for illicit use. That's when he did that interview
on CNBC.
Yeah, where he said that like fiat is never, US dollars is never used for illegal purposes. And he's parroting these same lines that we see in terms of saying that Bitcoin is used for money laundering, that it's used by terrorists and by criminals. And it's a way to, you know, paint it into a corner so that they can it's easier for them to enforce these types of regulations.
Yeah, and just a reminder that it has been proven that Bitcoin is not being used as much as people like to think it is for these types of activities. It certainly is in some instances, but it seems that the biggest use case, whether you like it or not right now, is speculation and a savings vehicle.
We see this with pretty much every privacy and sovereignty technology. Governments will quickly paint it as a criminal use, even though the overwhelming majority, 99.9% of users, are law-abiding users, and it's bad for the users and it's bad for their citizens at the end of the day.
Yeah, and just think about this in the context of where we are at this juncture in history. Like they Bitcoin is an affront to their ability to control the money supply and control the flow of the money. Importantly, if you're using it in a closed loop type way. And they're going to fight back. And this is slowly but surely they've been encroaching on this, but it seems like it's starting to heat up their attention on this space. And always remember, like, financial privacy is okay. We need liberty in the digital age, and it's something that we need to fight for. And me personally, I'll just speak for myself. Like, I think Bitcoin is imperative for preserving liberty in the digital age. If we don't have Bitcoin or something like it, and I think Bitcoin's probably our only shot, we are doomed to live in a digital panopticon.
I'd like to give a shout out to Alex Gladstein, who wrote a post basically working through the theoretical situation of a world without Bitcoin, and you're in the year 2030, and it's financial surveillance is everywhere, and we're all living in this panopticon, which we already are kind of living in, but it's just been escalating and getting worse and getting worse. And it's just a really good thought piece that everyone should check out.
Yeah. I believe he read that for the Unchained podcast too.
Right. He wrote it and then read it on the podcast.
Yes. So go check that out. We're not done with the government encroachment yet. The CFTC, this is actually brought to my attention right before we hit record, by Misha Gutentag on Twitter. Earlier this week, the CFTC announced that they are they're filing a civil enforcement action here in New York State against an LLC called Q3 Holdings LLC for raising money under the guise of trading it as a crypto hedge fund and then using the funds for something else. So that's why they're going after them in an enforcement. They are putting an enforcement action against them. But if you go and read the indictment, bullet point number 46 states that virtual currencies are encompassed in the definition of commodity under section 1A9 of Act 7 USC 1A9 2018. So again, going back to the theme of confusion between agencies in the US, particularly if virtual currencies are to be defined the way the IRS is defining it, this means that stuff like V-Bucks and Robux are virtual or commodities as well, excuse me.
Yeah, so everyone who uses those should also check the box.
Yes.
So they're trying to set a precedent here, I guess, right? It seems. I mean, the CFTC...
Many precedents.
CFTC has always been Bitcoin's a commodity, right? That's how they get to... Because they're the commodities regulator, right?
Yeah, but then IRS says it's property.
Right, because they're the property taxer. So all the agencies want it to be under their
guys. Yeah. What the fuck is going on, though?
They're like, hitting him from all the different angles.
As individuals, are we allowed to plead like confusion? Like, what is it? Like, how do you not have succinct definitions across agencies? That's bullshit.
You have to make at least a best attempt. You know, you have to make a best attempt here.
How do you make a best attempt?
Like, you know, hopefully judges will realize what a best attempt is, right?
Yeah. Hopefully people don't have to go in front of judge. That's the whole thing.
No,
like,
I agree.
All this confusion,
I 100% agree.
Leads to do we even live in a free country anymore?
I think it's important. It's really important to be clear here that even if you live under the false assumption that you have nothing to hide and that you completely trust the U.S. government, I disagree with you, but that's fine. If you operate under that assumption, you know, we found out this week, I have it later on the list, but we might as well bring it up now, that the U.S. government is saying that the Chinese allegedly were the ones behind hacking Equifax, that it was a state-sponsored hack. If the U.S. government can't keep our private information safe and we can't be private from the U.S. government, then we're basically saying that all of our citizens, that all Americans are, it's completely fine that all of our Bitcoin transactions are going to be tracked and traced by the Chinese. When you submit all these KYC documents and stuff like that, you should just operate under the assumption that the Chinese are eventually going to hack these institutions. I mean, Equifax had information on every single adult American, all of our personal information, and the Chinese were able to hack that. So, we can have backdoors. If we have these backdoors, if we have these databases of private information, then other nations, other malicious actors will be able to take those, and it's a threat to all of us.
Yeah, no, and it's fucking bullshit. Like, and that's why, again, like, this morning's bent may have been a bit of an overreaction because we don't know exactly what FinCEN guidelines are going to be, but we need more people to speak up. Like, this is not acceptable. Like, are we the land of the free anymore? Like, this doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, and then actually I had Lee Quinn on from CoinDesk yesterday, and we got on this topic as well. Like, a lot of people like to talk about dystopian futures, and history is written in retrospect. Like, we may already be living in the dystopian world, and we won't fully recognize it until decades from now that we are already in the panopticon. And if we are, like, do you want to live in it? And how can we get out of it? And again, I think technologies like Bitcoin are imperative for preserving that liberty, which is being encroached upon every fucking day.
I mean, look, I love this country, but we're clearly sliding in the wrong direction. And I it's very much make or break. It's very much make or break, and people need to
speak up
and stand up for your rights.
Yeah. So that was our almost half an hour spiel on the...
Oh, on the bright side, if the U.S. Marshals hadn't sold all the Bitcoin they seized, it would be over $1.8 billion right now. So we got, that's the bright side.
Yeah. So the U.S. Marshals, they've all the Bitcoin they've confiscated either from darknet markets or other operations they've taken down. They've done auctions throughout the years. Most famously, I believe Tim Draper bought like when he bought 30,000 Bitcoin at $300 or something like that.
Best trade ever.
Yeah.
From the Silk Road auction.
Yeah. And so they had another auction in January this year. They sold 4,000 Bitcoin, I believe.
Yeah. So they seized in total, they've seized 185,000 Bitcoin. That's a lot of fucking sats. And they've only made 151 million from those auctions, because they pretty much auction it immediately following, as soon as possible after they seize it. And the current USD value is almost $1.9 billion. So they missed out on about $1.8 billion worth of gains.
Talk about government incompetence.
Yeah.
They can't even trade.
Again, it's not even like they had to buy those funds. They seized those funds.
Yeah, yeah. They could have hodled them. Like, if you were talking about, like, geopolitical game theory, they should have at least a little stash of those confiscated funds for themselves, just in case.
Talk about the debt crisis. If they were just hodling 185,000 Bitcoin, that would go a long way.
Right. Yeah, the debt's getting worse. None of this is getting better. Yeah.
And yeah, so that 30,000 that they sold to Tim Draper was $18.7 million.
Holy shit.
30,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, and while we're still on the topic of this stuff too, like, if FinCEN, if today's bent wasn't an overreaction, and they are going to release more stringent guidelines, these guidelines are probably going to be enforced at the exchange level. So just be aware, like, even Cash App, if they're forced to operate under new guidelines, like, just think about how much money you have on that app or any other exchange, and seriously think about taking your sats into your own possession and self-custodying them.
Yeah, I mean, you should keep funds held on custodial services, whether that's an exchange or whether that's a wallet, to an absolute minimum. They could be blocked off from you without notice. You should just be constantly withdrawing if you do use a custodial service. And this is one of the things that I've always operated. I've operated under the assumption this whole time that I wasn't going to be able to buy Bitcoin, or at least take self-custody of my Bitcoin in the future. And I'm just trying to accumulate as much as possible for that point. Which is also one of the reasons why I drown out the short-term noise in terms of, like, trading and whatnot, because I think it's a more of a long-term game, and you're just trying to get as much Bitcoin before they close the spigots. But yeah, that could happen at any time. So people should just always be aware of that. And then the other thing is, if you don't coin join after you pull from these services, If we do hit this point where they end up criminalizing CoinJoin, saying it's illegal to use CoinJoin, saying you have to disclose all of your addresses, then the overwhelming majority of people are going to have to comply with this stuff, because they will know your addresses. If they see stuff move, they will know your addresses. They'll know all your past and future transactions if you don't use CoinJoin. And because of timing analysis, like, this is something that you have to do ahead of time, because if you try and move large amounts of Bitcoin through these services, it's relatively easy to then to base it off of timing. You know, you see five Bitcoin move through a service, you see five Bitcoin leave, and and you're able to make some conclusions. So it needs to be done over time, and you need to be prepared, because if you're not prepared, you're fucked.
Yeah. And then on top of that, also take into consideration exchange limits with moving that stuff off, yes, as the price is going up. So you could think that you'll be able to move all your Bitcoin off at once at one point, but if the price jumps up unexpectedly, which tends to happen every once in a while, you could find that you're only able to move a portion of your money off. So to keep that in mind as well.
And I know that Cash App's working on increasing those limits, freaks. So patience.
And again, yeah, they don't like the limits as much as you don't.
No, they wish there was no limits.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to some rosier news.
Yeah, let's get excited. I'm super bullish this week. Did you see the CNBC fucking clip?
Yes, I did. I didn't retweet your tweet because I retweeted American Hodl's, but I thought yours was good.
Are we not? I've been trying to stay humble, man. I've been trying to stay humble. We've been counter trading CNBC for the longest time, and CNBC is bullish. It's usually a time that the price is going to go down. Well, I don't trade, but just like mentally counter trading. But I don't think we've ever really seen CNBC, like a panel of CNBC people, be that woke that we saw on that. Like some of those quotes that were in that fucking clip were the most bullish thing ever. We've never seen them.
They get the value prop.
That was something. It's like, in a world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin will be the victor. You know, they said safe haven. They called it a safe haven asset.
No, that was Guy Adami who said that, particularly about, in the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is a safe haven. He actually came out a few weeks earlier, and I hopped in his mentions like, let's go, boy. Because he said, like, you know, we're going to look back in history, and the Federal Reserve and their actions are going to be, paraphrasing here, they're going to be looked at as some of the most evil things that ever existed on this earth.
Yeah, I that was the most bullish fucking CNBC clip I've ever seen.
I think we can
the most bullish mainstream media clip I've ever fucking seen. Absolutely insane. I am always bullish. You freaks know that. But this next cycle is going to, like, absolutely knock our fucking socks off. Like, it's going to be insane. I don't even... unfathomable. I don't think we can really truly fathom what we're about to witness here.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
I'm super bullish.
You don't think this government action can throw water on this?
I think the government action is a response to how bullish the fundamentals are. You know?
Right.
I mean, individual Bitcoiners could still get fucked and the price could pump, right? We could be cut off from self-custody. They could be forcing disclosures. They could be selectively enforcing people lying about the disclosures, throwing big precedents at people, you know, big cases. And Bitcoin could still be pumping, right?
Yeah. And I think we could take solace in the fact that Brian Kelly wasn't on that panel. He's usually like the number one indicator or contraindicator.
Shilling Ripple at the top.
Shilling Ripple. Shilling, like, not shilling Ripple, telling people how to buy Ripple.
Step by step, like how to transfer to Binance.
No, I'm Poloniex. And then Litecoin as well. He shilled that at the top. Charlie Lee was dumping on all of us, or anybody who had Litecoin.
Wasn't dumping on me.
Where should we go?
Clip was so good. That clip is worthy of like a cold open, just play it at the beginning of the podcast. That was crazy.
All right. This is what we can segue into. We don't have it on the list either, but Brendan's fire thread this week, I think.
How long has he been going off of Twitter?
I think like 6 months at least.
We're fortunate enough to have him in Telegram, but.
He came out of nowhere and dropped a thread, basically explaining the demographic tectonic shift that we're running into here in the United States, particularly. Like, we have all the boomers retiring, entering retirement, and they've been passively investing in stocks and bonds for the last few decades, and they're gonna have to pull that money out to finance their retirement, and that is going to cause a huge void in these markets, and the Fed is going to have to step in and print insane amounts of money as the participation rate in the economy falls, because as these boomers retire, they've been a demographic tailwind for quite a while now, and population growth has been falling as they've been accumulating wealth and passively for the last few decades. So as they start to retire and pull that money out of the stock markets and the bond markets, there simply aren't enough people to fill that void that's going to be created. We haven't been fucking enough.
There hasn't been enough fucking?
No.
Bitcoin is fuck a lot.
Yeah.
Or at least like baby making. Yeah. A lot of baby making.
Baby making on this podcast. Or that's weird. Never mind.
There's no baby making on the podcast.
No.
Individuals that participate in the podcast have been baby making.
Yes, now. Yes, that's true. But no, so this demographic shift in the workforce is about to slap us in the face. And so the Fed is going to be for, I mean, and that's, you see Trump tweeting about the stock market all the time. Like it is, Brendan mentioned it in his thread. It is a, an issue of national security now.
Did you see, well, first of all, love Brendan. He's a friend, a very good friend of both of ours. He always gets me bullish. He like has a special place in my heart, like next to Parker, him and Parker are like, I read their shit, I watch their presentations, and I just get really bullish. And I would, what did Crypto Bobby said in my Menchie's under the CNBC thing, and he's not wrong. He's like, Matt just wakes up in the morning, looks at the mirror, and he's like, stay humble, stack sats, stay humble, stack sats. I'm trying to remind myself. Like, guys, stacking sats is the easy part. Staying humble is the hard part. We saw this week Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, he was giving a speech, right? Mm-hmm. And the stock market was pumping, and then the stock market dropped and Bitcoin went up, right?
Yeah, because he said
that. It's pretty crazy. Like, from a like it's really becoming a macro asset. Like, it's turning into this macro asset.
I think the comments he made, the particular comments he made were about the budget deficit, and if it stays on the track that it is on now, it's going to be unsustainable.
And I guess he didn't mention lowering rates, right? Which the not mention hurt as well.
Yeah. And it's actually funny. Arb Dow pointed this out in a thread comparing Powell's comments earlier this week. He also mentioned cryptocurrencies, particularly central bank currencies, central bank digital currencies in his speech. And so we have munching butts coming out and saying that we need to nip this in the butt because we can't let like anonymous and illicit transactions happening. And then Arb Dow said, contrast this with Powell's comments a day earlier on Chinese plans for a stable coin, a ledger where you know everybody's payments is not something that would be particularly attractive in the context of the U.S. So we have more contradiction across U.S. agencies and banks or the central banking system and the government.
I think like an important part of growing up and becoming an adult is realizing that no one has any fucking clue what the fuck is going on.
That is very true. Right? Yes.
And everyone's kind of just making it up as they go along and pretending that they're not. Right? So that was like a major realization for me. So once you realize that, it all makes a lot more sense. Like, we have no idea what the plan is. No one has, like, even the smartest people in the country, they have no idea what the plan is.
They might not even be that smart. No, this is, I came
but to... Even the smartest people, that's what I'm saying. Like, no, I'm not saying that the smartest people in the country have, you know, positions of power. I'm just saying that even the smartest people have no idea what the next step is. What direction do you take? Because we've never been in this situation before.
No, and that's actually how I came to that realization. Holy shit, nobody knows what they're doing. Is when I worked in finance, particularly following the Fed and their policies. I was like, oh my God, these motherfuckers don't know what's going on. How the hell does this happen? That's when I dove headfirst into Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it becomes really obvious if you're a Fed tea leaf watcher, right?
Yeah, it becomes blatantly obvious. More bullish news. We had Jack Mallers on. He came through the studio last week, dropped the episode on Tuesday.
Bullish on Jack.
Bullish on Jack. We talked about his app, Strike, and the path he took to building that, and sort of the I think it's a really good episode if you want to know the trade-offs that exist with the Lightning Network and the services built on top of it. We're still figuring out the best way to use this. But with that being said, Lightning Stripe allows you to connect your bank account to the app and then pay Lightning payments right away. And then less than a week later, Iterative Capital dropped the beta for a very similar app. Escher Hub does the same exact thing. I'm getting access to that beta hopefully tomorrow, and we'll start testing it out. And Iterative teased it with a little demonstration video in which they bought a gift card on Fold, and as somebody who's using Fold and currently using a debit card because I don't want to spend sats to get sats back. You get more sats back if you do use Lightning, I believe. So
you do.
Using something like Escher or Stripe, where you're actually paying.
Strike, yeah.
Where you're paying Strike, yeah, that's what I said. I think that's what I said.
I think you said Stripe.
Might have.
I got you. No worries.
So if you use these apps, you hook it up to your bank account, and Fold just sees you're paying with Lightning, so you get more sats back, but you're really paying in fiat.
Basically, you change who does the payment processing, right? Because Fold's able to give you a better rate because they don't have to convert the fiat to Bitcoin. And so, but if you're paying, it depends what your price and your fees are, if you're paying on the Escher or the Strike side, right? Because that's the difference in the sats back is fiat based fees. And like fiat to Bitcoin, spread, like how what price you can buy it at. They also demoed it with funding a Breeze wallet invoice, which I thought was also just basically any Lightning invoice you can pay. And I think with Escher they're using Zelle as their integration, which I've never used Zelle.
I've used Zelle; it works well.
I don't think any of my banks support Zelle yet.
I think Zelle is supported by Bank of America and Wells Fargo right now.
But yeah, it's good to see just extending out the ecosystem and allowing people that accept Bitcoin to support more users that have never necessarily used Bitcoin can pay Lightning invoices, which is a really fucking big deal, I think. And just to reiterate, January of last year, I said that no exchanges were going to support Lightning, and
at a live show hosted by Iterative,
and now Iterative has Escher app, which allows you to seamlessly go from your bank account to Lightning. So, I was owned in the best way possible.
This looks cool. Coldcar releases a PSBT faker tool.
Oh, you got the acronym right.
Yeah, I always do now.
So this is for testing purposes. You can fake a PSBT.
Yeah. If you want to practice. Practice makes perfect. Practice makes perfect. Practice, practice, practice. That's actually what Lee said yesterday when we were talking, is that as somebody who considers herself not as technical as your advanced Bitcoin user, she's become more comfortable over time as she's practiced, as she's received and sent more transactions. If you are out there and have your coins on an exchange, you're just nervous because you don't think you're technically competent enough to do this stuff, practice, practice, practice. It gets easier over time. I will be drilling that into people's heads as much as I can, because as somebody who was nervous himself at one point too, again, the more you send, the more you receive, the more comfortable you get.
Get your fucking hands dirty. And also, there's only 3 spots left in the Citadel Workshop in San Francisco.
Newsflash.
During Bitcoin 2020.
Newsflash. Tor browser version 9.0.5 is out. So with this new release, what are we getting?
I don't know. Just update. They updated Firefox. They updated a bunch of things. Just update your shit. Tor browser is great. If you're using a Mac or Windows, it's like the most private you're going to get on those platforms. So
this release,
a really good browser.
This release updates Firefox to 68.5.0 ESR, NoScript to 11.0.13, and on desktop Tor to 0.4.2.6.
Yeah, it's a maintenance release. And then they released an update to Tails, which is a little bit bigger of a release for Bitcoiners. So Tails is the Tor project's operating system. The idea is that you put Tails on a USB stick, you run it on a computer. It doesn't store anything on the computer when you pull the USB stick. It's not supposed to store anything on the computer. When you pull the USB stick, it wipes everything. And it has Tor built in. And it has Electrum built in. So it was always a very user-friendly way to set up a pretty private cold storage wallet, especially if you never connected to the internet. But even if you connected to Tor, it would broadcast through Tor. You are trusting Electrum servers, which are probably run by chain analysis companies, but at least they don't have your IP address. One of the issues was if you wanted to use a hardware wallet, you had to install the packages separately every time because Tails doesn't remember anything. You had to do it every time. Now they have the Trezor package built in. So you run Tails, you can just immediately connect your Trezor to it without connecting it to the internet or anything like that, which is
pretty dope.
Yeah, just a fantastic tool. Everyone should have just a USB drive with Tails on it, just whenever they need it. You know, Tor has a lot of trade-offs. Who knows if it's probably secure against everyone except the U.S. government. Maybe it's secure against the U.S. government. No one really knows. But Tails is the easiest way to do it without shooting yourself in the foot, because it's just like everything is purpose-built to be as private as possible while still being relatively user-friendly. Like it's, you know, my grandma can't use it, my mom can't use it, but a lot of my peers who are not necessarily that technically proficient are able to use Tails, so check it out.
Get your hands dirty, freaks. Get your hands dirty. This is actually very encouraging to see, too. Next release of Wasabi Wallet will be signed with the proper Apple code sign, so you're not going to get that weird...
This is untrusted application. Yeah, immediately throw it out and move it to the trash. Yeah. Like, so this helps them with the virus scan things we were talking about, supposedly. But it also helps because not enough of you freaks are verifying your PGP signatures, which you should be doing. So at least it will be signed through this Apple, you know, closed system bullshit. It's like a closed centralized system. But at least it's some kind of check that's being done here if you're not verifying with PGP. You should absolutely verify with PGP. And then also on top of that, it won't scare people out of using the software. So it'd be nice if other Bitcoin projects could try and go this route. I understand a lot will be denied and Apple might crack down on say that you're not allowed to. But if they're allowing Wasabi, then, you know, maybe others that aren't currently being, you know, that aren't current part of the project. I think you have to pay a little bit for it.
Really?
It's like 100 a year or something like that.
A little pay to play action.
But it's just good. It's good to have. So it's really good to see.
Yeah. And again, there's a little less fearful when you're downloading that software.
Yeah. And it's just nice that it has the built-in verification. You should still verify through PGP. If you're running a Mac, I think it's gpgtools.org is the easiest way to use PGP on a Mac. Don't be overwhelmed. It's not that difficult. If you have any issues, you can DM me.
You got to stop moving your face like away from
the mic. I keep moving my face away from the mic, so I apologize to you guys for leaving you and coming back to you and leaving you and coming back to you. But GPG Tools, check it out. Very easy to use. And verify your PGP signatures. Why do we verify our PGP signatures? Because if Wasabi server that gives you the download gets, or any other server, the server that gives you Bitcoin Core gets compromised, and someone puts a fake Bitcoin Core up there that takes your money, the only way to tell if it's been changed is verifying the PGP signature. So the person who uploaded the file could still fuck you, but at least you know it hasn't changed since the person uploaded the file. You know someone malicious hasn't, and we saw that with Monero, where someone malicious got onto Monero's website, switched the file. So if you downloaded it, you downloaded a malicious file. If you verified with PGP, you would know that it got changed. And someone did notice like a half an hour in because they verified it. So the more people we have verifying it, it also gives like kind of a crowd immunity.
Yes. I need to get more up on my PGP game.
I got you. Let's do it. Let's have a Bitcoin day after the baby.
We do need that. Another light news item here. Blockstream announced that LBTC is now available on BISC. So if you want to jump on the Liquid network and trade via BISC, you can do that now.
I mean, we talked about the BTC Pay integration. I said it was like kind of non-story. The combination of BTC Pay plus BISC is like kind of a nice 1-2 punch to try and make Liquid a little bit more censorship resistant. It is still semi-custodial. It's not as censorship resistant as Bitcoin, but if you have BISC, you can pretty much, you know, I mean, BISC doesn't have great liquidity, and I doubt they have much liquidity for Liquid out of anything. But if they do get some kinds of liquidity there, then you're able to move in and out without any KYC. Which is like a prerequisite to try and make this censorship resistant. And then with BTC Pay, you're able to receive, right? You're able to receive it without KYC. So
yes,
it's an interesting 1-2 punch. It's something to watch. I wonder if they're going to have a CoinJoin implementation, So Liquid, we've said this in the past, has confidential transactions. So that masks the amount. It doesn't and masks the asset type. So you could be sending like Bitsy's shitty exchange token, or you could be sending LBTC. No one knows whether or not you're sending which or the amount, but they know sender and receiver. So you really get the privacy gains if you mix that with a coin join.
Afterwards, when you get out of during
it, yeah, you like mix that with a coin join. So it should be interesting to see if they implement some kind of coin join implementation. Just something to be aware of and keep an eye on. I don't really have like any day-to-day usage of Liquid, but I did try it with Sideshift.ai and Green Wallet. And the, you know, Sideshift is completely centralized, but they don't do KYC, and it's relatively seamless experience.
Yeah, I haven't tried out Liquid yet either.
Yeah. You should try it with Green Wallet and Sideshift. Just check it out.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I'll check it out this week.
Bitcoin Saturdays.
Another interesting news item. We want to keep you guys abreast of this. We've been talking about BIP Taproot, which recently got broken up into three BIPs, BIP 340 through 342. Brian Bishop at Kanzure, K-A-N-Z-U-R-E on Twitter, announced Sunday afternoon that a group of anonymous, quote-unquote group of anonymous devs was relaying a message through him to the Bitcoin mailing list with critiques of these BIPs, BIP Taproot particularly. The main claim, this is from Lucas Nuzzi at Lucas Nuzzi on Twitter. So the main claim that this Anon group of developers is making is it would be safer to implement MAS, which is Merkleized Abstract Syntax Trees, the technology that enables Taproot as a standalone BIP, as opposed to MAS plus Schnorr equals Taproot, albeit simpler. Lucas isn't convinced that's a good approach, and I believe Matt Corallo and InstaGibbs also came out publicly and on my radar and said they weren't convinced by the critiques either. It does seem like it's a pretty big mass shill, but I just want you guys to know
that. Mass shill?
Mast shill.
Oh, mast shill, yeah.
Yeah. I just want to let you guys know this critique is out there.
It's good to see critiques in general.
Yes, it is.
I don't really know enough to discuss the actual critique, but it's good to see critiques. We've talked about this on the pod that we want to see more critiques. I think someone was fudding it, saying that it could be a chain analysis. Did you see that?
I did not see that. but well, since we can't explain it, I'll read why Lucas thinks that the critiques are not unwarranted, but aren't that good.
It's mostly a complexity thing, right?
Yeah, one of the biggest benefits of Taproot is that it makes the outputs in a transaction indistinguishable from each other. That necessarily requires Schnorr's key aggregation within the tree and would be tricky to implement if both were to be separated. I get the point on complexity and auditability that the Anon group is bringing up, but to be frank, there's a lot about Taproot that I still don't understand. What I have seen is that the current implementation path for these BIPs has already been simplified considerably, even for dummies like me. Within the initial scope of Schnorr, for example, was cross input aggregation, which is a way to aggregate all inputs in a transaction into a single one. Huge potential, especially for coin joins, but also very complex. For this reason, the current implementation is much simpler with MooSig. What Peter Woola and others discovered while researching Schnorr was that cross-input aggregation could be implemented via a generalized version of Taproot, Groot, which is yet another reason why MAS can be an incredibly useful technology if combined with Schnorr. Lucas isn't convinced that the risk of splitting MAS and Schnorr outweighs the potential benefits of both technologies combined, especially when it comes to privacy. Having said that, the point on the need for more thorough technical feedback on these BIPs still stands. The more feedback, the better, the more clarity that comes out of it. Even if these questions or these concerns are shot down, more clarity comes out of the stuff.
I mean, I have two quick comments. I mean, the first thing is I fucking love that Bitcoiners are so ethical and the imposter syndrome is so real that we all consider ourselves dummies along the whole level of Bitcoin understanding. And it's just a bunch of dumbasses running the whole network because we're all... a lot of people the majority of people are very humble about it, and I really respect that. Like Lucas called himself a dummy there, like he's not a dummy, right? And the other thing is, it really goes to show I think how great Bitcoin's BIP process is evolved to this point where we could have, you know, people say, you know, I've disagreed with so many things that Pomp has said, so many things that other like crypto influencers have said. And then people come and they go with a complaint. Why do these people that are like targeting the lowest common denominator have an oversized voice in the community? But meanwhile, we have people who are just completely anonymous. A group of people or one person just submits this to the mailing list, right? And it gets real responses. It gets real thought and real responses put towards it. This is just completely anonymous though, right? Mm-hmm. So like it's literally the exact opposite of saying that like a crypto influencer has oversized influence on actual real Bitcoin things, right?
No, I completely agree.
Really and great to see.
Very good to see. And yeah, we need to be as critical as possible. Again, I think this is an imperative technology and we should treat it as such. And that means scouring for any potential hiccups and any upgrades that we have going forward. So yeah, this is out there. Be aware of it and do more research into Taproot and what it can enable. And yeah, I just thought, just to put my two sats in there, after the vigorous review process that involved hundreds of people, I found it a little weird that this was coming out after that. Like, how come this wasn't brought up during the review process?
Well, the reason the chain analysis FUD was circulating was because it seemed like the person who responded wasn't aware of the privacy benefits of having them combined.
Yeah.
So it seems unlikely that they wouldn't be aware of it. So maybe they're just disregarding that aspect because they're really trying to torpedo it. Was the reason. But you know, like, look, everyone should try and steel man the shit out of fucking Taproot. Steel man it. But before we implement it, it's best that everyone tries to fucking steel man it. Yeah. I want as much as possible, as much critique as possible.
Yes. More critique, the better. Speaking of chain analysis, CoinDesk dropped a story, basically broke down the government agencies that are paying for chain analysis.
Chain analysis works for us. We pay for chain analysis. I helped pay for chain analysis through my tax dollars. What is it? Over $10 million they've received over the last 4 years.
From the IRS alone.
I thought that was from everyone. That's just the IRS?
Oh, no. Just the IRS since 20...
I thought that was the cumulative number.
Well, in 2018, the IRS paid $3.3 million.
Oof.
It might be cumulative. It is cumulative. You're right.
The agencies over all 4 years is like $10 million, but it's escalating. They're paying more and more. Every year, they're spending more and more money on this shit. And they're aware, you know? And if they don't understand Bitcoin, they pay chain analysis to understand it for them. And they have this little tool. They call it Reactor. And they get to click buttons and see the flow of the Bitcoin transactions.
If you're working at chain analysis or any of these other confusing. There's a company, Chainalysis, which does chain analysis.
It's a good name now.
There's others like Elliptic. If you're working for these companies and listening to these podcasts, what the fuck are you doing? Like, do you care about liberty in the digital age? Are you trying to fuck over your fellow humans? Just think about that.
You know, the money. They like the money.
Yeah.
That's why I think, you know, fuck appealing to ethics, appealing to morality. Like, we need to have the tools in place to render their business obsolete. That's the only real Bitcoin way to solve this. That's the only real solution here. But it is extremely frustrating to see our tax dollars being spent on this kind of surveillance technology. But people have to realize, like, every single Bitcoin transaction you send is recorded on a ledger forever. Like, we're all bullish on Bitcoin here. We think the Bitcoin blockchain is going to last forever. All of your transactions on this chain for fucking ever. You submit KYC docs, the Chinese will get those KYC docs. Keep that in mind. They will see all your past and future transactions. If you do not educate yourself on Bitcoin privacy, then people you don't want to know all of your past, future transactions, your net worth, your salary, everything will be able to see that. And you have to take it into your own hands.
Are we LARPing here? Like, is Bitcoin sufficient enough?
We're half LARPing because we're very public Bitcoiners. So we could potentially get very fucked here. And I'm aware of that, freaks. I know that we could get fucked here. I do not want to go to jail for 30 years. I am a patriot. I love this country. I wish this country went in a better direction. I think we can push this country in a better direction. It's important. But it's also important that you take your rights into your own hands, that you realize privacy isn't fucking criminal. And the first step there is to educate yourself. 6102 Bitcoin, our buddy on Twitter, has a website that lists very good privacy resources. I obviously have a vanity domain that connects to it. That's btcprivacy.org. btcprivacy.org, educate yourself and stand up.
Are you confident that Bitcoin's privacy will get better throughout time?
No. I am cautiously bullish, as we said last. I'm cautiously optimistic. Lightning specifically has made me way more optimistic than I was before. And the privacy benefits that could potentially come from Lightning. But I think that people cannot get complacent. This is the most important issue here in terms of Bitcoin succeeding. I mean, I think Bitcoin's value prop fails if every single Bitcoin holder is easily identified and attacked, basically, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And that's what I mentioned in the Ben today, too. Like, this is also a product of the era of Bitcoin in which we live in, where we're highly dependent on these centralized services that take KYC AML. Like, as we move closer to a closed loop Bitcoin economy, I think this stuff will get better as well.
Yeah, but the closed loop is far away, right?
It is far away, yes.
We need solutions here now for the people that will inevitably go through KYC. Bitcoiners like to talk a big game about being anti-KYC. I fucking hate KYC. I use Cash App, right? I use a KYC service. I try and limit my KYC exposure, but I have to use a KYC service. I think the majority of people listening to this podcast right now are buying their Bitcoin, they're stacking their sats through a KYC service. Even though we all hate KYC and we talk big games on Twitter, the majority of us are doing that. So we need to have solutions in place where people that are using KYC services can lessen their privacy burden. And that's why I'm really supportive of things like BTC Pay, Wasabi, and Whirlpool, and Samurai, just Samurai in general. It's very important. It's the most, and Join Market. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry I don't mention Join Market enough. I think it could be more user-friendly. We're thinking about starting some bounty programs in that regard. But I all of these services, and Lightning, you know, all these services that help with privacy, all these tools that help with privacy, all these projects that help with privacy, it's super important. It is probably the most important aspect of Bitcoin right now.
Perfect segue into the next topic, which is PaySwap on Lightning. Our beast.
If we had Val here, she could tell us the exact name.
I'm going to try and do ZMNSCP.
No, I think you missed a J.
Oh, did I?
Isn't there a J in there?
I don't know. No, I got it right. ZMNSCPXJ.
The J was late. Okay, freaks, you decide if we give it to him or not. I don't know. I don't know better. But Z-Man proposed this. It was his initial. We talked about PaySwap, which is on-chain. PaySwap was inspired by this. The idea is that you send a self-payment through Lightning, and then one of your routing fees to one of the nodes that routes you is actually the payment. So it's the payment's going along, it gets back to you, but on the way it pays a routing fee to someone that's the actual payment.
Yeah, so it's a self-payment, and if there is a drawback to this, it's just it may be a little bit more expensive because you're making more hops, that you have to pay fees along the way. But it does seem like it could help with privacy. Aaron Van Weerdom, the great Aaron Van Weerdom.
Oh, I love Aaron.
Wrote a piece on this particular proposal, so if you guys want to go check that out, we are definitely going to be linking that in the show notes. Oh, all right.
What
is this coronavirus close contact app?
Did you not see this?
No.
So the Chinese government is leveraging their surveillance state to create this close contact app. You put in your government ID number, and it uses the surveillance of you and the surveillance of known infected people to tell you if you've been in close contact with those people. So it uses the surveillance on both sides, and they sell it to you as a benefit. But it's only possible because they track every single one of their citizens way too fucking much.
That's scary.
Scary as fuck.
And another topic I talked about with Lee yesterday, I officially am not going to be talking about the coronavirus on Twitter anymore because I'm so fucking confused. I have no idea what's going on. I've had people in China and around China reach out to me and say some of the stuff I've been posting on Twitter is a bit alarmist and probably shouldn't be. I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I appreciate that as well. I think I've reached out to you a little bit about it because the problem is we can't verify any of this fucking information. This is like really one of the first times where you see on social media the inability to verify video specifically. There's a lot of video that's been coming out that we're not really sure where it's coming from, what it's showing. And this is before we haven't even hit the deepfake era yet, guys. Like, we're about to hit the deepfake era, but right now we're in the era where you can post a video, you can post an alarmist claim with it, and no one really knows what the fuck is going on. And as Bitcoiners, we're not supposed to trust, we're supposed to verify, and it's just really hard to verify.
I'm going
to
try and be better. I'm going to try and be better. Hand up. I could be better. All right. And this is actually pretty fucked up. I'm talking about the government spying on you and backdooring shit. The CIA owned an encryption company that was purported to be private, that was facilitating global
for like 70 years or something insane.
Yeah, man. They had a front company that was selling encryption technology to other governments around the world.
They were like the leading company.
Yeah, backdoor.
They had a backdoor. They could read everything.
Yeah,
Crypto AG, and they sold all their assets in 2018. So it was operating from like after World War II in partnership with the West German government, which if you're a part of our generation, hasn't existed in our lifetime. but they partnered with them and they sold this encryption technology starting from physical encryption all the way to chips in modern day encryption to governments. Not the two major adversaries, not to China and Russia because they understand and do their own in-house stuff. But
Latin America
to pretty much every other government. Yeah. And they were just tracking everything. And this is why it's so ironic that the US government is scared about Huawei, having 5G access everywhere, which I am also scared about Huawei because they are definitely going to track everything and have backdoors to track everything. The US government knows that because we do that to everybody else, right? Yeah. And we've been doing that to them for decades.
It's all fucked.
There's no such thing as a secure backdoor. You have a backdoor. If we can access this backdoor, then other nation states, other malicious individuals, entities can then also access that backdoor, and everyone is less secure for it. You can't secure the majority of people if you choose. If you're able to surveil everyone, the majority of people will never be safe. And so you have to prioritize the majority of people over your will to have control over a small minority.
Yeah, and this is why open source is probably the best way forward as well.
Yeah, probably. Absolutely, without a doubt, the only way forward is free open source software. You have to be able to read the code. You have to be able to verify it for yourself. Because there's just too much history here. We can't just forget all the fucking history. Anything that's closed source is backdoored. You should just assume that. Like, maybe it's not, but you should fucking assume it.
Yep. Let's end on a good note here. Really cool markets being watched by FTX, U.S. election futures.
Oh, we actually have to end on a bad note if you're going to go with there. But yeah, FTX is great.
Why is that a bad note?
No, this is great because you missed a bad note.
What? Yandex?
Yeah, did you see that?
No.
Let's just jump back to Yandex.
All right, so we can end on before we get note. To the elections.
Yandex is Russian Google.
Mm-hmm.
If you submit a selfie of yourself that's never been on the internet before, 9 times out of 10, it will pull up your information.
Yeah, so Eric Wall at ERCWL on Twitter, cryptocurrency researcher.
I like Eric.
And so he basically tested out Yandex and did a Google reverse image search versus Yandex facial recognition search. And he inputted a Snapchat pic of his in Google, pretty much. Didn't bring up anything
because Google doesn't do it ethically for they don't do it for PR and ethical reasons. they hold their technology back and they just say like, oh, a gentleman's in this picture.
Yes.
But Yandex doesn't have that reserve. And they Yandex, which is, probably has worse technology than Google, let's be honest. It's Russian Google. They just pull up right away. Eric Wall.
Yeah, they links to his CoinDesk articles, Bitcoin.com articles, links to his Twitter tweets. So he makes the point, like, I guess he'll never be able to go on a dating app without giving away his full name, social media, home address, and
stuff
like that.
Let's be honest, Eric. You, in your dating app, you definitely say, like, you're a cryptocurrency analyst. But no, but whatever you guys do, do not upload your selfie to Yandex, like, to test it out. Don't do it.
Try,
you know,
keep...
if you have to do it, like, if you have a friend that you don't really like and they have, like, a closed Facebook profile, well, you should delete your Facebook. But let's say you still have your Facebook and you see them post a picture, upload their picture. See if their name comes up.
Don't
you
do know? That. Don't be a dick.
Don't upload your own but, and then delete your Facebook. Like, you shouldn't have a Facebook. But don't upload your own picture because then Yandex has it and they have it connected to an IP address, which you probably shouldn't do. So just be careful about that.
Yeah.
Now let's turn to the positive news.
Futures markets for presidential candidates here in the States.
This will be the most accurate way to tell who's going to win this election. I avoid all politics. The freaks know I don't like talking about politics. This is, if you want to avoid the noise, you want to see who's winning, you check the FTX markets. And the reason is because they have a non-KY. Technically, the majority of the world is not allowed to participate in FTX markets. They have the, you know, the verbiage, the wording there that says you're not allowed to, but they do have a non-KYC threshold where you're able to withdraw up to $2,000 a day if you have no KYC. So theoretically, they're never going to say this, but anyone in the world can access it if they have a VPN. And I think it will become quickly the most liquid prediction market in the world. It will become more accurate than polls. This is what Augur was supposed to fix, but Augur is way too complicated and is not decentralized in the right ways. You know, it attempts to be, but it's still centrally controlled, and but not in the way that makes it easy to use. You know, so like, this is like BitMEX. Well, that's FTX is a competitor, but it's like BitMEX for elections, right?
Yeah, and I mean, highlights that maybe sometimes decentralized services are better for these types of markets if they're able to evade getting shut down. So right now, according to this futures market, Trump has about a 64.5% chance of winning the election in November.
Yeah, so it's not great for the operator. The operator is always at risk. FTX is always at risk. The users that takes custodial risk, you know, what is it, FTX does shotgun KYC? They could, they haven't, but they could. You have all these issues, but from a user-friendly perspective, once you have hard to censor money, censorship resistant money, like, we could have bucket shops around the world that offer these kind of trading options, right?
Yeah.
And you have VPNs, you have Tor, and all of a sudden, you know, it's opened up globally. And when you have real skin in the game, the beauty of prediction markets in general is when you have real skin in the game, you see more accurate results. You know, we saw this with Trump last election, where people won't answer polls accurately because they didn't want to be labeled as a Trump supporter. But when you have skin in the game, you're just trying to make money. You're going to answer exactly accurately, like how you think, right?
Yeah, no, completely agree. So this contract will expire, I guess, when the election results are in. And the way it works is a futures contract expires to $1 if Trump wins the U.S. election. So right now it's trading at about 64.5 cents.
And Bloomberg's been pumping, man.
Did you see what he did?
Bloomberg, is Bloomberg going to start alt season? The Bloomberg.
Where is Bloomberg? I can't find him on here.
Bloomberg is currently trading. I have it open right now. Bloomberg is currently trading at 10.5%. And it opened at like 7%.
Yeah.
All of them refer to win the election. So on the Democratic side, there's five Democratic candidates. They do all the top candidates, the top six candidates. They're all discounted because they also have to win. Then not only do they have to win the primary, they also have to win the general, right?
Yes.
But it's very simple. It finishes, if they win, it finishes at $1. If they lose, it finishes at $0. And in classic shitcoin casino fashion, FTX allows you to do like 100x leverage on those as well, which you should not do, you know.
Yeah, no. Have you seen Bloomberg's like latest
the influencer strategy?
Yeah.
Did he reach out to you?
Not yet.
I'm waiting for my $1 million cash out from.
Is that what they're paying them?
No, I don't know. Freaks, I will never sell any of my tweet space or any of my.
Neither will I. But yeah, no, I think I've been actually pretty repulsed by all these influencers like posting these screenshots. It's obviously an intern interacting with
them. And then like they post underneath like, oh, paid for by Bloomberg, but no one knows if that's like sincere or if it's a joke, so most people don't think of it as a disclosure.
Yeah,
but they have technically been disclosing it. Whatever, you can't like manufacture memes. Like that's what the Ethereum guys tried to do. Like you can't do that. Like no. Memes are organic. They get born. The people that create them don't even know they're creating them when they get created.
Exactly. You know? They're emergent.
That's the true memes.
If you see people out there putting out contracts for memes, mark them as an idiot. That's not how memes are created.
I think we would be mistaken to not mention that.
Talking to the mic.
I apologize, freaks. We should probably mention that it does feel like the 2017 chaos of alts and stuff is about to.
Oh yeah.
Come back in full storm.
As much as we'd like these alts to die out, because all of them, in my opinion, don't have a lot of merit to them. It's just inevitable. It's this nature of these open source protocols. I mean, we could spin them up if exchange is going to offer the trading of them on their exchange. People are going to trade them, and it seems that alt season is starting.
And the proof of stake pump that we've been talking about for a while here, where exchanges are incentivized to pump proof of stake chains,
yeah,
because it gives them more control, influence, and revenue, has also been the case. I think Brave New Coin, Josh Carpe Noctem on Twitter,
posted Josh Alschwitz.
Yeah. Carpe Noctem, right?
Mm-hmm.
He posted that 18% of all Tezos are on exchanges right now.
Yes.
Staking through exchanges, on exchanges, in custodial wallets. So exchanges have a direct benefit to shill you these proof of stake chains. Yes, keep in mind that altcoins, especially these super liquid shit coins, will pump bigger than Bitcoin in this next cycle for short periods of times, and then they will dump bigger than Bitcoin. That is a loser's game, in my opinion. All of these chains are trending to zero in Bitcoin terms long term. I think fucking real estate and stocks are trending to zero in Bitcoin terms. I think gold is trending to zero. I think everything is, but especially these altcoins. So, you know, if you want to touch the fire, touch the stove and get burnt, by all means, fucking do it. But from my experience, the overwhelming majority of people will have more money at the end of the day if they just fucking stay humble and stack sats and don't fuck with that shit.
I agree. And this is part of the reason why we have Cash App as a sponsor. They don't confuse retail with a bunch of tokens. It's only possible to buy Bitcoin there. Hopefully it stays that way. If it ever changes, we probably will rethink our partnership with them. But Doge Toshi.
Our boy Doge Toshi.
Yeah. Yeah, from the block, he pointed out, it's pretty crazy, actually. During the 2017 run-up on Coinbase, users had four options. They could buy, and they only had really three for most of the year. They could buy Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, or Litecoin. And now that's increased to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
so
9,
many.
10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24.
Fucked up.
6x. So they have 6x the confusion and the options to pick from when they
go
to the app.
It's like the shittiest of shit. It's like the shittiest. Well,
this is a good time to remind people of unit bias, right? Yeah. So a lot of people.
Sats the standard.
Sats are the standard, but unit bias, a lot of people will go on Coinbase and they'll see something trading at below a dollar.
Like Xerox. Xerox trades at like 7 cents or something.
Yes, and they'll think that's a cheap coin to buy that will have a potential to reach Bitcoin's level.
Why am I going to buy Bitcoin at $10,000 when I could buy 0x at fucking 7 cents? Maybe it'll hit $10,000 one day.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's the fucking unit bias bullshit.
Yeah.
That's why every single altcoin has a larger supply than Bitcoin. Well, not, I spoke in absolute. 99% of altcoins have a larger supply than Bitcoin because of that fucking unit bias.
Yes. So this is why Ripple, a bunch of people pump Ripple, and they're like, Ripple's going to get to hundreds of dollars one day, not realizing that that would be a decatrillion-dollar market, which is highly unlikely. Well,
sats are cheaper than XRP.
Yes. Sats is standard. That was a long rip. We're almost an hour and a half in. Are we riffing on anything?
You know, we've been riffing for a fucking hour and a half. I've really enjoyed this episode. This was a very good episode. I really enjoyed this fucking Michter's is what I really enjoyed. So I appreciate that Marty let me drink at 1 p.m.
I mean, hey, teach their own, man. It's your body, your choice. Yeah, my balls are hanging out of my pants. They ripped as soon as I hit
Oh, I have something.
All right, here we go.
That I wrote down. Do we want to talk about JP Morgan and Consensus?
Oh, my God. Well, let's talk about Consensus. Last week announced another round of layoffs as they're trying to raise another round, I believe $200 million this time around. But they, I believe they laid off like 16% of their workforce or something like that. And then The Block was reporting and CoinDesk was reporting earlier this week that JP Morgan is thinking about selling their Quorum blockchain unit to Consensus.
That's their private corporate blockchain, centralized bullshit, right?
Hey, the banks are using Ethereum, man. Is that bullish?
It's the, if we're looking for a banker's chain, isn't that supposed to be Ripple? They own MoneyGram.
Yeah, so be aware. Again, that's...
It's garbage news. It doesn't matter, right? It's bullshit. It doesn't... It's in the scheme of things, it's complete non-story that doesn't fucking matter, right?
Exactly. But again, like, so think about Consensus. Like, they are a VC bucket shop for focused on Ethereum, and Bitcoin doesn't really have anything like that. And Alex Bosworth actually made a good point on Twitter earlier this week. He said Bitcoin's strategy to defeat its competition is to wage a long war of attrition. Centralized governances will eventually die due to secession issues and corruption. People will give in to temptations to hyperinflate. Marketing funds will run dry, and Bitcoin will still be here. So just keep that in mind, freaks.
Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love. If you don't like that, Pika, too bad.